Sion 180, coming up in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Be bold. Take risks. Lead by example. Believe in your power. Say what you feel, mean what you say. Join me at Sion 180 on this journey of discovery and advancement.
Hello and welcome to the podcast Sion 180. I'm your host, Leslie Ann Sion. This podcast is all about igniting conversations and empowering lives with real talk, real people, and real change. With over 20 episodes across 4 seasons, we've featured inspiring voices from the Caribbean and the diaspora, diving into topics like health, politics, the arts, finance, leadership, and many more topics that truly matter to our community. I invite you to check out my website at thepodcastcion180.com or your favorite podcast platform to catch our latest episodes, and follow us on Facebook and Instagram for updates, advice, and engaging discussions. Today, I will be chatting with Ashvin Ragesu. He is a client relationship officer and investment advisor with Fort K Investment Advisors out of Grand Cayman in the Cayman Islands. Ashvin has managed a portfolio of high net worth individuals and clients of various wealth levels, discussing investment needs and proposing recommendations based on those requirements. Ashvin has worked in big banks, hedge funds, and audit firms such as Goldman Sachs, Blue Crest, and KPMG in London, where he gained a variety of experiences across the financial industry. He has a master's with a distinction in finance and investment management and a bachelor's in astronomy, space sciences, and astrophysics. Welcome, Ashvin. Thank you for being on the podcast, Sion 180.
Thank you, Leslie Ann. Very excited to be here.
Great to have you to talk about money matters.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's probably one of the most important things in our lives and something I think people might not take as seriously as they should. I think it's a very important topic.
I agree. And straight off the bat, we know that there is a difference between saving and investing. And usually in the Caribbean, people think more along the lines of saving money in a bank account. So yes. Today, what we really want to do is to get an understanding of the basics of investing. How can we start? What do we need to do to start? And this is where you come in.
Yeah. So I think you've hit the nail right on the head. I think a lot of people see saving and investing as the same thing. And I understand why, you know, it's not, you know, something that is you experience until you start like earning money, and it's not something that's a clear distinction that's made about in school. I think you always say, make sure you set aside a certain amount of money per month. You know, that is what saving is. You know, you take it from your personal income, you decide, I want to save, let's say, $50 a month, and then at the end of the year, you have $600. That is good. That is all well and good. You should always be saving money. But that will always be a stockpile of cash. And that's not, you know, there's a concept of interest, which if you're putting your money in a bank account, you might earn a little bit of interest. But in essence, investing is taking a stockpile of cash and purchasing assets with it, with the intent of those assets to grow in value over time. So that really is the difference. It's almost seen as putting that money to work so that it can grow, or to also produce you an income.
Right, letting the money work for you, so
yes,
to speak.
Exactly. Yeah.
Right. So when we're thinking about this, a lot of us in the Caribbean, we think that we don't have access to the global financial markets. We think that that's for like really wealthy people. And you've got to have a certain amount of money before you can even think about that. Are these myths, or is there some truth to this?
If I go to YouTube and I type in how to invest, all the adverts I get are American or North American specific, so Canada and even Europe. I don't think that the online platforms that allow people to invest necessarily target the Caribbean, and I don't know why that is. Maybe there's a misunderstanding of the wealth or competence of the people within the Caribbean.
I think we don't have money then.
or don't have access to US dollars, maybe. But you know, there are platforms available for people. My own personal investment platform that I use is called Interactive Brokers. I think you could find it by typing ibkr.com. That is probably one of the better low-cost platforms. I'm not recommending anyone over another, but that's what I've had experience with. That's like a low-cost broker, and what that allows you to do is buy these assets that I was talking about, that the intent for those assets is to grow over time. There's another one here I had recorded down prior to this. There's another big one called Fidelity. And start saying that again.
Yeah, but the main thing is for us to know that there is a medium through which we can get introduced to investing and so on.
Yeah. So there are online platforms available by which, you know, people in the Caribbean can go and open up an investment account, put money in. Usually there's a short questionnaire survey. Certain online brokers might have certain country requirements, but you know what I've found is that with a relatively small amount of money, you can open up an investment account and start putting your money to work.
So what's a relatively small amount of money, Ashvin? What are we talking about? Can we start with $1,000 US? What's the small amount?
I mean, you know, that is a bit of a nebulous term, right? I think it really depends on what is small relative to that person. Yes. I think maybe $1,000 US is like a good benchmark, but you know, it could be 100. I think what you have to determine is how much money is my bank going to charge me to send the money to my investment account. And if that's $100, then you're going to need more than $100 to start.
Makes sense.
Yeah, so it really is dependent on the person, and you know what your personal income is, and then how much you feel like you can. If you were to lose that money, you wouldn't be too hurt by it, right? I think that's probably a good way to determine what you should start investing with. You know, if I was to not have that money to live with and be fine, then that's probably a good amount of money to start investing with.
So that's really the sort of risk versus reward approach that you might probably recommend based on your appetite and what you can afford to lose, so to speak, yeah?
Yeah, so I think that's a good segue into the risk and reward kind of conversations that you have when you think about investing, because nothing is ever guaranteed, right, in investing. There is a risk associated with it, and certain investments have a certain level of risk, and there is an adequate level of reward that is expected with that level of risk. So in general, an investment that is considered low risk wouldn't necessarily give you the highest return.
Yes.
But a high risk investment, which has a higher risk of losing your money that you put up or your principal, you would expect to receive a higher rate of return or reward from that in the long run. Low risk investments would be, you know, something like a bond or a treasury bill, which is more analogous to a savings account at a bank. You don't expect to lose that money, and it's going to return you interest periodically.
Yes.
And then a high risk investment, or a higher risk relative to the low risk, a higher risk investment would be considered, you know, something like a stock or a share of a company, like essentially equity ownership of a company. That would be higher risk, because essentially that company could go bankrupt and your investment would lose its value accordingly.
And this is where it becomes ticklish for first timers in particular, you know, trying to understand how the market works and the difference between stocks or bonds or ETFs and T-bills, all of these phrases and terms and abbreviations that you investment advisors utilize, and it seems like Dutch to a lot of us. I think part of what we try to do here is to educate the audience into the particular area that we're discussing. So for instance, how does each of these investment types work? Or can you just tell us, for instance, like an ETF or a bond? How does that work in real layman's terms?
Yeah. Okay, so let's take a bond to start with. I think that, for me, I think that is the easiest one to understand. So it's essentially a loan that you make to a company or a government. So for instance, if I were to lend you $100, Leslie Ann, and you tell me, you know, I want to, Ashton, please, could I borrow $100 from you? Every year, I'm going to give you 5% interest, and I'm going to borrow that $100 for 3 years. We have now entered into a bond with each other. So I'm, as the lender of that money, is going to receive the interest, the $5 every year, for 3 years, and then after the 3 years, you're going to give me back $100. That, in perfect terms, that is how a bond would work. There is a risk associated with that, right? So Leslie, you could take that $100, invest it into a property, and that property could, you know, a hurricane could come and wash it away, and then that, right, there you go. But that $100 is essentially now lost, right? Because the value of that property would have decreased or gone away significantly. Yeah. So then you might not give me back that $100 after 3 years. So there's a risk of what we call default, or you're defaulting on your obligations, so your debt obligations. So that is a bond. You could go out into, you know, financial markets and purchase a bond with a company, but the most common ones would be with governments, right? And the most common government people have this arrangement with is the US government. So the, you know, bonds exist for a life. The example I just gave would be like a 3-year bond, but they also have short-term bonds. Treasury bills would be an example of a short-term bond with the US government. And they typically exist within 1-year lifespans. Right. So people who have a low kind of risk threshold or risk tolerance, they buy these short-term treasury bills so that they can earn a bit of interest, and, you know, their money isn't locked up for a long period of time.
So do these offer, Ashwin, sorry to interrupt you, but do these offer like better interest rates than just depositing it in an account at a bank or financial institution?
In general, they do. I would say there can be very specific cases. There are some high yield savings accounts that exist, but in my experience, they don't tend to exist in the Caribbean. I've had experiences with those in the UK. I know friends that have 6% high yield savings accounts, which is a higher rate of interest than a treasury bill would own, but my bank in the Caribbean doesn't offer that to me. So in general, treasury bills do tend to offer a higher rate of interest than a bank account. And like a savings account, there's banks that offer term deposits. And in general, the interest on a treasury bill is higher than that. But this, again, you have to determine how much fees are associated with you purchasing a treasury bill, how much fees are associated with your bank account, and that's kind of when you can determine. At the moment, treasury bills are, I think, 4.5% interest annually. And if you were to just use your regular old savings account, I know mine earns me not even half of 1% interest.
Yes, exactly.
So it is quite a significant jump up in interest that you can gain from purchasing treasury bills for not much more risk, actually, because they are considered, I'm not saying that they are, but they are considered the safest investment in financial markets.
I think that's important for the audience to know and understand that you can get these better returns by simply doing something that is still risk conservative and have a better ROI, so to speak. If we compare short term versus long term investments as a starter, well, let's talk about the group that's just beginning. And we're a young professional, and we're deciding, okay, we want to approach money matters differently by investing. Well, what are some of the guiding steps that you think they would need to know for starting off in investing and building wealth?
So I think probably I touched on this previously. So I think when you're thinking about how much you're going to start investing with, you have to think, how much money am I willing to lose? And you, or maybe I should say, how much money would you be okay with losing, and okay with not from an emotional sense, but from a financial position sense? It's not gonna be your entire life savings that you're gonna put up. If you have $10,000 saved up, you should maybe start investing with $1,000 or $2,000, not the full $10,000 or even $8,000, right? You still wanna, keep a reserve of cash that if you have emergencies, that you can use to pay those kind of emergency bills with. That's, again, highly dependent on the person, right? Some people might have a higher income or higher amount of expenses, so that's completely up to you, and you should. That's probably the first most important step. And then next, you need to adopt a mindset that's associated with long-term returns. There's no, this is kind of touching into scams, but a lot of scams you see in investing and financial markets are like short-term high returns, right? And that's just not how investing works, or you should approach investing. You need to think, I'm setting this money aside, and in 10, 20, 30 years, when I'm coming to retirement or I'm looking to buy a house, that's when I'm gonna be using this money. So you need to adopt a long-term mindset when it comes to investing. You need to put that money aside. I'm not going to touch it. I think the term of nest egg is used quite a lot. It's my nest egg. I want to use my nest egg when I'm older and I don't have an income anymore, or I'm only using my pension as income. That your investments are going to start supplementing you when you're no longer earning an income.
Yeah. So you have these financial goals that you set for yourself, and then you do your research and you consult with a professional on investments and the options that are available to you based on your appetite and your purse before you indulge in it. Because it's interesting that you mentioned about scams. We've suffered quite a bit in the Caribbean, and to some degree we are still vulnerable. We've had major collapses where people have lost, and corporations have lost millions and millions of dollars, because you see these fancy schemes with outrageous returns, and you're thinking, yeah, I'm going to go quick in and quick out, so to speak, and capitalize on that. So it's good for the audience to be wary of those who come to you bearing these gifts, because in the long run, it could hurt you as well. Ashvin, in setting financial goals, for instance, certainly there's a difference for someone who is perhaps just starting off in their 30s as opposed to someone who is close to retirement age. Is there any point at which one should not think about investing? Because I'm hearing you say that there are safer options depending on your goals.
I think that's a really good question, and a really good distinction that we should make. Everyone, I think, at every point in their life should think about investing and be investing, right? As we were kind of talking about earlier, there are different levels of risk with investments. And in general, the longer term that you set your financial goal from the current period, so if it's like a 20-year time for your financial goal, if your financial goal is to help you in retirement, typically you can stomach a bit more risk, so you can put your investments into higher risk assets, and then the idea is that the returns over time, you have a higher amount of time to experience those larger returns. Typically, you know, as you get towards that financial goal, so again, if it's retirement, in 5 years, you might start shifting your high-risk investments into lower return but lower risk investments to try and preserve the capital more. So, and again, that's kind of why I'm saying everyone at every point in their life should think about investing, because even if you are 5 years to retirement, you might have built up, you know, if you were saving, a significant cash pile. But even then, you could buy bonds, you know, at 5 years to retirement, help build up an income and build up some interest, and really try and protect that principal. And then when it comes to retirement, you can be getting a steady stream of income from those bonds to help supplement, you know, your pension income. So there are some nuances that occur, and everyone is different. And financial goals are different for everyone. I think that was the kind of point I'm trying to make, that financial goals are to you, and the investments that you make associated with the financial goals are also unique to you as well.
Yes, I'm hearing you speak about building, you know, sort of simple balanced portfolios, diversifying, monitoring as your financial situation changes or your risk appetite changes. So it's good for us to get a sense of how that works, Ashvin. One of the things that I'd like to just indulge in a little bit is how we sort of avoid the what you might term the common beginner mistakes. Trying to read the market by yourself or based on Google or some other online, and not really accessing proper information from experts. And then, of course, as we talked about, the scams and high fees. So how do we avoid some of these common beginner mistakes? Because listening to you, I'm ready to start. I have a few thousand bucks and I am willing to take some risk.
Yeah. So I think probably the first beginner mistake, I think, is expecting that you're going to get rich quickly or immediately, right? That makes you fall into these get rich quick scams.
Yeah.
So you really need to, one, educate yourself as to what realistic returns are. And that is difficult nowadays. When you go onto YouTube, there's countless, you know, financial freedom type YouTubers, and they're telling you, you know, regardless of what you think about crypto, a lot of it is get rich quick in crypto. But it's hard to cut through that noise. I think that book, The Intelligent Investor, I think is a good resource. It's stood the test of time. Maybe what you could also do is look up some reputable platforms. Like Vanguard is a very large asset manager in the US. You know, you can, they regularly put out information that people could use. They actually are an ETF provider, and I can touch on ETFs a bit later, but what you should do to kind of avoid these common mistakes are, one, adopt that long-term mindset. You need to realize that this is a disciplined behavior. You don't want to be too emotional with your investing. Common in financial markets is when, you know, stocks tend to decrease, you know, as much as they go up, they can also go down. So it's good to know that can happen. And when those, you know, events happen, you don't want to be emotional and sell, you know, all your investments at a loss or at less of a gain, because, you know, in 10 years time, when the market might recover, you know, you don't want to have less money invested in the market at the time. So this comes to your point of timing the market. It is really a fruitless endeavor, right? If you think the market, you know, let's say you have $100 and you think the market's going to go down tomorrow, it's going to decrease by 10%. So you don't invest that money, and then it goes up by 5% tomorrow. Now you've lost the opportunity to gain 5%, right? You lose that opportunity cost. So there are times when you can make educated decisions about investing. And there are times maybe where you think, I don't want to be investing as much right now because of where the market is, but if you're waiting to invest because you think, you know, the market's about to go down or the market's going to shoot up tomorrow, I think that is a mistake. That's everyone will tell you that. There's a very famous saying, which is timing the market versus time in the market. So that's to say how long you've been invested for, and time in the market over the long run matters a lot more than timing the market. I'll see if I can find it after this recording and share it for you. Maybe you can add it in after, but there's an interesting graph, like a bar graph, of how your investments would differ if you missed, you know, like the 10 best days in the market over the last 40 years, and it is significant. So there's definitely time in the market matters a lot more than timing the market.
Yeah. That's a really good phrase there. I like that very much. And one of the things that I caught on to from you, Ashvin, is about not making emotional decisions. And I think it's important for the audience to understand that sometimes, you know, people get caught up. I don't like this company because I don't like the CEO. I don't like their political philosophy, or that's not really what you should be focusing on.
Yeah, I think, you know, really when you're looking at building a portfolio or investing in companies, you need to be looking at what the underlying value that company is generating. For instance, you know, companies that generate a lot of cash or that they're going to be paying you a dividend, that's kind of the things you need to be considering. Sometimes if you have a CEO who's controversial, it might affect the stock itself, so that is something to consider. But if it's, you know, you don't agree with that person, you don't like that person, that shouldn't be a factor in your decision making. Though, you know, there is a concept called activist investing, but that's typically for, you know, super high net worth people who can acquire a lot of shares and then they get a seat on the board and they can help make decisions. For us normal people, you know, we really want to be looking at the company itself, how the company is doing. But
we can't afford the social conscience.
Yeah, a little bit, yeah. I mean, financial matters tend to be slightly separated from your social conscience a little bit. But I'd say this is probably a good time that I could talk about an ETF and how that...
Yes, you know, yes. Because we did talk about the bonds and the T-bills, but we can indulge a little bit in the ETFs before we close off.
So I think, ETFs, how I would look at it is it's like a basket of stocks, and stocks are like this equity investment or ownership of a company. So what you're really doing there is buying a lot of companies all at once. You're buying equity in a lot of companies all at once. So the most famous ETF would be the 500 largest companies in the US, and that is referred to the S&P 500. So the largest ETFs in the world are ETFs of the S&P 500. So what that does is that it allows you to spread your risk across multiple companies at once. You know, it really goes back to don't put all your eggs in one basket.
One basket, right? Yeah.
If you were to say, I'm going to split my money across 500 companies, you've got a much greater chance that those 500 companies are going to continue to create and generate value in the future. So I think ETFs are a really good way to diversify. You mentioned diversification earlier. You can really diversify your investments with ETFs. And also the good part is you typically need a lot less money to buy an ETF than you do to buy a stock, right? Because it's split up and it's an average of all of those companies. So I personally, I love ETFs. I think investment advisors nowadays utilize ETFs a lot more. I think it was the 1980s that they were kind of
introduced
index fund. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So they are a very, very popular way of investing. They're a good way to manage your risk. ETFs are good overall, but you have to be very careful. I will say, you have to be very careful and know what those ETFs are investing in. You know, they tend to have themes. And it, sometimes, you know, while I say they're a good way to manage risk, a specific ETF might not be as diversified as you might think, you know. So there are certain nuances there, and again, research, talk to qualified people to help you make those decisions. There's not just one size fits all, not the same. There's a lot of nuance with investing, so you've got to talk to someone or do the research and understand the research to make those decisions in an educated way.
Absolutely. Thank you, Ashwin. I hear your theme, and I think it is very critical for the audience to walk away with this type of foundational knowledge in terms of building wealth and how to invest. We certainly heard your caution, you know, about starting off small, having diversification, having a balanced portfolio, time in the market, knowing your risk appetite, and most importantly, I think, is speaking to a professional and not trying to do this on your own. This is what investment analysts and investment advisors are all about. And as you said to the audience, investment advisors are available to all of us, even if we may think we have just a small sum of money to invest. But it's about getting the money to work for us, and about us thinking differently in the Caribbean about investing and saving and using money to work for us. Because even though we're in a small island developing state, so to speak, it doesn't mean that we can't have an appetite for growing wealth, and we shouldn't be ashamed of wanting to pursue that as a financial goal and objective. Ashwin, I want to thank you so much for joining us. Our 30 minutes have vanished, and to me, you've only just teased us with investments. There's so much more we would like to speak to you about, maybe on another occasion. But thanks again for joining us on the Sion 180 podcast.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate, you know, you inviting me on. I think it was good. I really hope that, you know, it helps change some people's minds, and maybe interest them a little bit. They should speak to someone, even at their own bank. They might have investment advisors there that they can speak to. So, yeah.
I think this is what the forum is all about: to provoke thoughts, to provoke ideas and actions, and, you know, just get us moving beyond neutral, doing things differently.
Yep.
Thanks a lot, Ashwin.
Thank you, Leslie Ann. Pleasure.
Enjoy the rest of your Sunday.
Thank you. I will. Same to you.
Okay. Bye bye.